Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Predators force a Game 6, so we will have playoff hockey back at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night. But Willie, this is the first time we've had you back in studio since what, Friday? So we haven't been able to break down Game 3, the absolute heartbreaker of Game 4, and of course, Game 5, Predators win at Vancouver. It's been a funky little series. It's been a series of, if you looked at it on paper and you don't see the score, you might think the team that won is completely different than the actual team that did win. Like, I look at Games 3 and 4, on paper, the Predators outshot Vancouver. If you don't look at the scoreboard, the Predators outplayed Vancouver, but weren't able to get a win at home. So, Willie, so far, your impression of this series so far, what gives you confidence and what gives you pause?
I think if you look at the series, all five games have been razor's edge kind of games. In the third period, it's anybody's game.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first thing that the Predators can say that they've done is they, as the underdog coming in and playing the team that won the Pacific Division, they've stood toe-to-toe with them for the most part. I think the home team has had an edge in possession in general. Now, I mean, we can go through, you know, each section of each game, but generally speaking, the games in Vancouver, Vancouver's had the crowd, they've had the last change, and their depth has shown maybe a slight advantage. And it's been the opposite in Nashville. Nashville, I think, has really, really had the upper hand at even strength in the games in Nashville. But you put all that together and you've had five games where you go into the third period and you don't know who's going to win. It's anybody's game. There's been comebacks. There's been holding off the opposition for dear life. But they've all been close. So it probably should be 3-2 for somebody. You could argue it could be 3-2 Nashville. And the numbers, I think, bear that out in terms of expected goals. What is the series total goals scored? It's 12 for one team, 12 for the other team is what it is. So it's a very even series. And that's a testament, I think, for Nashville that they haven't looked like a big underdog in the series. So I think that's what maybe gives you confidence if you're Andrew Brunette, that you can find a way to eke out two more, because I think this game on Friday is going to be, I would be surprised if it's anything but what we've seen. It's going to be a really close game. It's been a low event series, right? They're not running and gunning out there. Both teams have done a great job defending. It's really how Vancouver chooses to play and is able to dictate play. I think Nashville would love a more up-and-down game where there's more goals scored and more shots. But the fact is, it's been a very low shot series. Mm-hmm. It's been tough to get through shots. Andrew Brunette calls the series muddy. You know, there's just not much space out there. You can't operate. The defense is too good.
Yeah.
You take guys like Nikita Zadorov and Tyler Myers, these giants, Carson Soucy. They're just all up in space, passing lanes, deflecting shots. They're so rangy. Mm-hmm. There's just not much room to maneuver. So it's going to come down to who makes the plays. And one of the themes that we've said all year long about the Predators is they've done a tremendous job game in and game out, putting the analytics in their favor, right? Getting enough scoring chances to win games and preventing enough scoring chances to give themselves a chance to win. They didn't get great goaltending for most of the season. When they did get great goaltending, they became a way, way better team. They don't have great finishers, a ton of great finishers. Philip Forsberg certainly is. Roman Josi is an elite player.
Ryan O'Reilly,
I wouldn't even say is an elite finisher. He's a great all-around hockey player. But he's not a Connor McDavid or number one
right.
center kind of guy.
Yeah.
But when they've had those surges where everything is going in and they're getting secondary scoring, they've become a great team.
Mm-hmm.
So, UC Saros played great in Game 5. If they can have another game or two like that, that's a if. That's a that makes them that closes the gap. They're no longer the underdog. And if they could have a couple of games where they're more opportunistic and finding ways to convert when they get chances. I'm not saying Kiefer Sherwood is going to turn into Connor McDavid overnight. It's not going to happen. But for a game or two, like he makes a great play the other night, chips a pass off the sideboards to himself. He's away, 2-on-1. He's got the goalie beat, and he hits the post. Like, if you can have those moments where you're the team that makes those plays and converts those opportunities, it can happen. But the same thing is true for Vancouver, right? Yep. They're probably sitting there saying, well, if we can get Pugh Suter to make a player, if we can get Elias Pettersson, who is an elite player, he is a guy that is an elite finisher and has been for years, and he's still, what, 24, 25 years old. If they can unlock his talent, they're saying all we need is one great game from him, and we're going to advance and move on. So that's how close it is. That's what these games are going to come down to.
I can't wait to ask Elliot what he's hearing, the commentary in Vancouver about Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, they've talked about him on his podcast a lot.
I'm sure they are all
disappointed.
Yeah. Disappointed, so frustrating. And to your point about how close this series is, think about it. It's been a difference of 12 seconds in game one and a breakdown in about 3 minutes in game four.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it took. 3.5 minutes, give or take, for the Predators to either win the series versus now be down 3-2 in this series. Mm-hmm. It is such a razor's edge of a difference. And they can't afford to make those kind of mistakes, because I've seen so many texts in the text line. Like Adam in Portland texted in and said, Vancouver's trash. They're frauds. And I said, no, Vancouver's a good enough team that if you break down just a little bit, if you give them just a little bit of a leeway, they're going to take it. But I don't think that they are such a great team that is overwhelming the Predators, because, like you said, this very well could be a 3-2 series in favor of the Predators. That's how different that it's been. That's how thin the margins are in this series.
No doubt about it. And obviously, Vancouver not having their Vezina-level goalie in there has also helped level the playing field. But this is what Vancouver probably should be commended for as much as anything, and that is they have protected their second and third goalies, and that's part of the story for tomorrow, who will be their goalie. I think there's a good chance that they would come back with Casey DeSmith if he's healthy enough. He's healthy enough to back up the other night. So I would think if he's progressed a couple of more days and he's able to go, you go with him over the youngster, Shelovs, who's played, but those guys have both played well.
Impressed with Shelovs.
Yeah,
there's several saves he made in Game 5 that I'm thinking, what? How in the world?
They haven't cracked.
Just stop that.
I think that's the number one thing you look for is when the backup guy comes in there, you ask yourself, is this guy going to crack and be a little too overwhelmed with the situation? And to their credit, both of those guys, they haven't. Mm-hmm. They have not, quote, lost the game at any point for them. They have kept that level pretty good, and they've had a lot of help because of those giants that they have in front of them, and Quinn Hughes, who has the puck more than anybody else on any team. He keeps the puck. He plays keep away. He's tough to get, but the Predators have done a really good job on him, right? That's another thing that they've done, I think, surprisingly well, is they have not allowed Quinn Hughes to just take over the series, which, you know, he might win the Vezina. He's probably going to edge Roman Josi, I would think, for the actual Vezina. He had 92 points, and he's getting some points in the series, but he's gotten some secondary assists and things like that. I don't notice him just completely taking over the game. But on the other side, Roman Josi hasn't had a dominant series by any stretch, right? That's another thing that you hope is in your hip pocket somewhere. Can he come up with a Roman Josi game where he is the difference, right? He finally busted through and got the goal. It was an ugly goal, but it was a great play to get in there and create the chaos that ended up in the back of the net one way or the other. Maybe that will springboard him. So there's a lot of things. But it's been such a great series to watch, because every minute, you can't take your eye off the series. There's not one game where you flip off the TV and say, this game's over,
in the third period. Then you were wrong.
That was a mistake. Yeah.
So, and there's a few things that I want to get into of, you know, what gives us encouragement, maybe what discourages us, what you've seen from the Predators that we don't love. There's one thing that I keep going back and forth on, and I think that both things can be true, that I can feel encouraged about how the Predators have played in each of these last three games. And I could say four, but they didn't really play very well in game two, but they found a way to win. Mm-hmm. But in the last three games, I feel like for a majority of 60 minutes, the Predators were the better team. And that can give me encouragement for game six and potentially even game seven. But at the same time, that frustrates me and discourages me because the Predators have been the better team for a majority of the last three games, yet they've only won one of them. And two of them were at home against backup goaltenders, and you weren't able to get one of those at home. So that's the frustrating thing. You've played well, but you still find yourself down in the series.
Well, they haven't been able to, you know, after Demko went out, they haven't been able to really get any pucks on nets to really try to test this guy. But you gotta, you know, credit Vancouver for that, keeping the puck on the other end of the ice, and they've been doing a tremendous job at that. You know, some of it has been because the Predators have been in a penalty play, and trying to guard that. But I think they've done a good job of keeping their, you know, third string goalie clean, not letting him get as many, not letting the Predators get as many shots on him. They've had their shots. Don't get me wrong. The Predators have had their shots. I think they've hitting the post more times than not this series. But
it does feel like it.
Yeah, but for the most part, Vancouver has done a good job at keeping their goalie clean. And, you know, the Predators, you know, have it at times. So they got to find a way to make it a little bit more even to lopsided on their end as far as, you know, spending more time on the other end of the ice rather than their own.
Yeah, I would love to hear where the fans are on this right now, because I think a lot of people should probably admit that they didn't think they'd be able to win game five and keep it going. So I thought that is a big feather in their cap to be able to rebound from a shattering loss. I mean, that was a devastating loss on Sunday. And to pick up the pieces and get back in there and win, that says a lot about the group. But as we've talked about so often, each game is its own thing, right? I don't know if it's going to mean a ton, the quote momentum. You hope it does. But that's where I want to hear from the fans on what they think of this series, because it's really interesting. It's so hard to get the good looks. That's the number one thing about if you've watched all five games, it's hard for anybody, even the best players, to get a lot of looks. So you're sitting there going, well, how come Josi can't get more looks? How come Forsberg can't get more looks? But their guys are saying the same kind of thing. They've got the second fewest shots on goal of any team in NHL history through five games. But they've made just enough plays to have the lead in the game. That's, I think, where, and Barry Trotz had a great, I think, discussion with Jared on Tuesday before game five about that part.
Yeah.
JT Miller, Brock Besser, in particular, those two guys have made the plays. They've made a few more plays. They haven't overwhelmed the Predators with tons of chances, but when they've had the chance, they've made the most of it. Just a little bit more than the Predators guys have. That's where, if Josi and Forsberg can turn the tables a little bit and they can be the ones that have that great game, like Forsberg's eye-popping goal in game two, that was the kind of moment we're talking about there. He's capable of that. Josi's capable of that. Can they have those moments in game six?
Well, they're going to need them, obviously. Yeah. But then, you know, I look at the adjustments that Coach Bruno made last game, putting Tyson Barry in and letting him control the power play. Now you want to see what counter to that is and Vancouver going to have. Are they going to try to counter that, or are they going to say, hey, listen, you know, yeah, it worked once, but for the most part, we were able to still keep them in check. Will they just keep status quo? Or will the Predators even come back out with Tyson Barry to lead the power play
again?
Yeah.
I do want to get into that, because I think that's a good debate of, you know, Luke Shen out with an illness in game five. We hear, I believe, Max, you said, reported that he was out on the ice today?
Yeah, apparently he was able to go through practice today, which is a good sign. And so you have some options there. I don't think Spencer Stastny will be cleared, but you never know. He was week to week. So now we're past 1 week since he took that hit.
It was a brutal hit.
That was a brutal hit. And that's another thing that always is a big part of series like this. That's physicality. And I think those that have watched all of the series think this has probably been the most physical series of any of them. And hockey fans love that. right? It's just been nasty, and tempers are flaring, and it's great. It's just great competition.
But game four was a bloodbath.
Right. But
everybody was bleeding.
But Nashville had a defenseman knocked out of the series, basically, on a brutal hit that was only ended up being a two-minute penalty.
Yeah.
And yet it was Vancouver that was all complaining about the officiating in game five. Where Dakota Joshua had a similar kind of hit on Evangelista.
Slammed Evangelista into the boards.
And he's saying that wasn't even a penalty? Really?
Cry me a river.
So anyway, but that is that is a decision I think that they're going to have to make. Tommy Novak, who has been under the spotlight since game one, he still hasn't busted through. Mm-hmm. He still has no points. So do you go with him on home ice where you can match him up? Or do you take him out for some other forward? Or do you put a seventh defenseman in? These are all things that are options for you with the depth that you have. And I don't know if there's any right or wrong answer, but Barry did absolutely spark the power play when he was moved to the first unit in the second period. They didn't score on the first two, but they started to get looks. They started to get, and I think that helped lead to the power play goal in the third period that Josi scored, that Barry was credited with an assist on.
And the power play has been one thing that, you know, 2 for 19 on the power play, and I think that the story of that could be totally different, where maybe you're getting great looks and you're getting pressure and you can only find the net on a couple of them. No, outside of the power plays in which the Predators have scored,
it hasn't been a force. Like even you could be 2 for 19, but you could be setting yourself up. You could be putting pressure on them. The other team can go,
they haven't even put pressure.
They've got them. They haven't put enough pressure. Whereas Vancouver has the same amount of power play goals as Nashville,
but it's felt different.
But they have, I think, threatened more. They've gotten more, to use the term, expected goals. Have they put more pressure on Nashville when they've been on the power play? For the most part, yes. They didn't in Game 5. I thought Nashville's penalty kill was huge in Game 5. They were tremendous there. But Vancouver essentially won Game 3. They only had 12 shots the whole night, but they scored. They made two big plays on the power play, and it won them a game.
2 for 3 on the power play in Game 3 versus Nashville 0 for 5. That's the difference in the
difference
game.
In that game.
It was a one-goal game. I do want to get back into, you know, what lineup changes could be made, the decisions that Andrew Brunette has in front of him. But first, I do want to get into your thoughts. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Steve is on the line with a thought on the Preds. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. Really enjoy the show. Willie, you've seen me before. I go to the games. But just listening to what you guys had to say, it's almost like Vancouver has really studied our power play, and they know what to do to counter it. But, you know, Tyson Barry has not played that often. And see, so I think that probably played a big part in, you know, to scoring that goal. But prior to game five, you know, they beat us all three games in the regular season. And prior to game five, you know, it was just, they had dominated us. But the Game four, we had that killed me. I mean, we had that game up to the last 3 minutes, and we couldn't prevent them from scoring. And I am so tired of seeing our players lie down on the ice to block a shot. I mean, I appreciate them sacrificing their bodies, but stand up, play hockey, because if it was Josi and O'Reilly lying down, if they had been up on their skates, they could have went over there and stopped that player from scoring his third goal. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. They sold out to block the shot in the final seconds, and they did a great job, Vancouver did, of shifting. First, Gus Nyquist went for it. Roman Josi moved it around the boards and tried to clear it down the rim. Nyquist went for it to try to chip it like Sherwood did the other night. Didn't quite get it, and Quinn Hughes made an unbelievable move. Just shook him right out of his shoes, right? And so Nyquist put himself out of position. And then all of a sudden, so there's one guy gone. And then Roman Josi, Ryan O'Reilly tried to dive to block that last shot. They didn't get it, so they're out of position. And so now the numbers start favoring Vancouver down low, and it turns into that. But it's chaos, right? It's frenetic. If you could do it over again, you probably do it different. But somewhere, too, you have to credit Vancouver for making plays when they absolutely had to make them. They made none up until 3 minutes ago. They made none in game three, except for the two power play goals. But those guys have made enough plays, and that's maybe what has given them the edge. That has been what's given them the edge in the series, in a six-on-five situation and in a power play situation. It's not a high volume, but it's made the difference for them to be in the lead of the series, in a series where each team has scored 12 goals.
It doesn't need to be high volume. Because in this series, a single goal has been the greatest currency.
Yeah.
When Zadorov scored that goal in Game 5, I thought, okay, there it is. That's the game. One goal. I felt like that's all it took. And it's a strange feeling after watching the Predators in the second half of the season. I mean, they had no problem scoring. It was, you know, 6, 7, 8 goals a game. Now it's if you can find the net once or even twice, you feel pretty good about your chances. It's a weird, funky series, and we'll continue to get into our takeaways and really what we want to see from Game 6 tomorrow night. Elliot Friedman in 30 minutes. Right back into your phones coming up next. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie D. Mace, 1025, 1063 The Game.
You've talked about the closeout game of a series being the hardest to accomplish. Beyond the obvious of just the desperation level of the other team, what makes it so difficult to get that done?
Well, I think that obviously the desperation of the other team is a big one, and I think you have to match it. And you have to be comfortable in a tight game. I think that's really important. If it's 0-0 late in the game, even if it's 1-0, you know, going into the third, I think you got to be very comfortable playing in that and just, you know, buy your time for your chances. I think sometimes when you want to close out, you push the envelope too much, and the next thing you know, you're giving up Iron Man rushes, power plays, you know, things like that.
That was Vancouver Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. Shout out to Robbie Stanley, who sat down with Rick Tocchet earlier this week. And that's really been the key in this series, is closing out games. That you could be entering the third period, and there's a single goal on the board, or like in Game 5, all three goals in the game were scored in the third period. That if you think that you've got if you feel comfortable like the Predators in Game 4, go into the third period up 3-1, you cannot feel comfortable. It's all about closing out the games in this series whenever goals are so difficult to come by. And one small breakdown, one small mistake could be the difference in a game.
That's what this series has been all about. And I think Rick Tocchet is an outstanding coach, and he's very good at preaching what his team has to do to be successful. If you look at some of these players that are having resurgent kind of years, they've been a little bit all over the map, sometimes with Vancouver, sometimes in other places. But he's taken guys who may have had a reputation for not necessarily being winning players who make the right play. Remember, Nashville is the team that has a lot more players that have playoff success and playoff experience. So Tocchet is a guy trying to show some of these guys the way. But, for example, I think JT Miller deserves a lot of credit for maturing. Like, he's had, if you look at him year to year, he's always been a talented player, but he's had his best all-around year. And I think he's a guy that's raising his game in the playoffs. Like, he is driving them. And he's the one guy that has been, not the one guy, but he's one of the few guys that they have that have been through a lot of these playoff battles. I think he's been huge. But Tocchet, I think he's got his team comfortable playing this type of hockey. This is how they've played all year long. It's like, our first goalie's out, no big deal. Our second goalie will do it. We'll protect him. Second goalie's out, we got to put a rookie in, no problem. We'll still play our structure.
Yep.
If we just keep doing our things, that's what he keeps preaching, we'll give ourselves a chance to win, and my playmakers will make enough plays. That's what he's banking on with that attention to detail. And Nashville's got to find a way to break through it.
Well, okay, with that being said, because I asked Adam yesterday this sort of same question about, you know, the Predators having to change their style of play because of what Vancouver is doing. And, you know, they're making it more of a rough and tough defensive sort of game, whereas the Nashville Predators, they want to keep the ice. They want to, you know, push it up. They want to be on the offensive side more so the defensive side. But do you feel that they've had to change sort of their style of play because of the way Vancouver's playing?
I don't think it's the Predators that are changing their style of play that much.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing what they want to do, especially when they're dictating. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. You can't dominate. It's unrealistic to think you're going to dominate a number one seed every game. Mm-hmm. But I think when they're on, and especially at home, you're seeing what they do. Well, that phrase that they use, relentless, mm-hmm. you can see it, right? They were in a great groove with that in the third period, in the minutes leading up to the 6-on-5 nightmare that they had. But they were pounding them into submission, right? They were taking it to them. Vancouver could not get down the ice long enough to get a shot. I think that's resembling what I saw mm-hmm. during the regular season. So I don't think they're adjusting the way they play at all. I think they're trying to impose their will on the opposition. And there was a great question asked to Andrew Burnett, and I think Rick Tocchet has given similar answers too, about adjustments that you make within mm-hmm. a series. And I think what Andrew Burnett's answer was really got me. He says it's not as much adjustments. It's pointing out some of the things we've been pointing out from the start of the series. But now that you've played a team 5 times, you're like, oh, that's what Coach was saying. That's what he was saying about this. These little situations here. That's what he was telling me. Now yeah. I got it. I got this now. So I do think there's adjustments within the series, but it's little things, right? You're still trying to win with the formula that got you here to a large degree.
Promise your phones. I want to get right back into your phones. And we are to your Predators thoughts and phones all show long. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. Trevor's on the line with a thought on the Preds.
Now, this is my man. Trevor is the man. Trevor, I have gotten the bobblehead that you – I just wanted to let you know that you – I presume it was you that passed along and it showed up in the press box in Chicago? Okay.
I was surprised that they actually let me get through security with it.
So thank you for that.
I went down to Milwaukee to go see the game in Chicago and brought the Askarov bench pressing bobblehead for you. So I'm glad
so
I was
good.
Able to get it to you. I found Pete Weber, and I'm glad it made it.
I thought if you were going to have to like throw it up from the stands into the booth and just hope that it landed in there.
Or sneak it in catfish style, yeah. Like tape it underneath
cellophane
your jersey.
Wrap.
Yeah.
So I'm calling the vent. I understand it is the woes of being a farm team, but, you know, first Stastny, then Juuso Parsonen, and now today Gravel is gone. You know, Milwaukee starts the playoffs tonight against the Texas Stars. It's always the sadness of being a farm team, so I just called the vent that you're taking all of our guys.
I know that is
a bummer.
Because Kevin Gravel is the captain, correct?
Correct, he is. Yeah.
So they called him up for insurance with all the defensemen that have been banged up. They brought him here just for. And apparently, he took a shot to the nose.
An awfully bloody nose, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Per Nick Kieser, the reporter's Twitter.
Yeah. Wow. But I apologize for that, Trevor. That is kind of a bummer. But hopefully the depth will pull through.
I'm sticking Fedorov, though. I don't know if anybody else is, but man, that guy is. I feel like he's getting to me, and I'm not even on the ice.
Zadorov is. I remember you asked me who the villain was, who I
he
thought it would
Zadorov.
Be. Zadorov, yeah. I think, is becoming. And then he decides to, complain about the officiating after the game, saying that Evangelista has been dodging checks all series. Oh. So you're supposed to just let 6-5 guys come in and, sorry, let me just hold my position right here so you can smash me up against the boards. So let's tell Quinn Hughes, well, if Evangelista's supposed to do that, well, then let Quinn Hughes just stand there so the big guys for the Predators can hit him.
Was it Zadorov?
Of course you're supposed to avoid checks. What is he talking about?
Was it Zadorov that cross-checked Philip Forsberg in the back?
Yeah, right in the rib cage, in the kidney.
Yeah.
That hurt watching it, too.
Yeah.
Thank you for your call, Trevor.
Thank you, Trevor. Oh, man, that hurt just watching it, too.
Yeah, Zadorov is the villain. Yeah, he's the villain. And he's doing it well.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing well. He's not supposed to be scoring goals. He hadn't scored a goal like that in his life. He scored the other day. UC Saros admitted after the game, he didn't think he was even going to shoot. He thought he was going to try to pass it across, mm-hmm. which was the right play.
It was a muffin that Saros has to stop.
But it was a perfectly placed shot at the same time.
And it is shot one went that right, Saros went left.
You shouldn't score on that play, but... Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of element of surprise and a miraculous path that went in there. But mm-hmm. I could understand if Quinn Hughes scored that or Miller. But Zadorov, come on! That was a little bit lucky. He scored 2 in the series. That's really not his game scoring, but he has stepped up. I give him a lot of credit. He's played really well. Mm-hmm. He's been a little bit of a reckless guy. This is what I was talking about with Tocchet. He's got taken guys like that. Tyler Myers is another guy that's been a little all around the map. He's been a really good player, but a lot of people thought he was getting too old. But they're getting great minutes from those guys. They're playing to their strengths, and they're doing a really good job.
We've got another caller on the line with a thought on the Predators. Julian's on the line. What's up, Julian? Thanks for calling in.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me. I just want to say I think Tommy Novak, I think he's had a great regular season, but I think he needs to be benched in Game 6. He just seems obsolete. Can't really make a play. I don't know. I think he's in his head at this point, but interested to hear y'all's thoughts.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Julian. And I've had this thought because Andrew Burnett has said before both games 4 and 5, you know, we're considering lineup changes. And when he says that, I think I take it as a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Tommy Novak, because he's been the one that's been so obviously just out-physicaled and so obviously outplayed, where it just feels like the playoffs are just a little bit too fast for Tommy Novak, that it looks like this is his first playoff series. So I've been saying now for the past, I guess, 3 games, do you make a lineup change? But am I wrong in thinking if you haven't made a lineup change, you're not going to make one in Game 6? Like, if you're not going to make one in a gotta-have-it Game 5, why do it now?
Andrew Burnett has had some great interviews with Robbie and Rexro during the season where he talks about the drip.
Yeah.
And what he means by that, it keeps him up at night. It's like the water dripping in the faucet. But it's decisions like that. Mm-hmm. And I think this is probably one of them. He knows that Tommy Novak is capable of making that one play that could win you a game, right? He's got that skill, but it hasn't come out. He hasn't, number one, created a lot of chances in this series, and number two, when he hasn't made that play yet. But is he more capable than a guy that you would bring in, a Juuso Parsonen, a Cody Glass, that hasn't played the whole series? Mm-hmm. That's the dilemma, right? And what is the answer? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Like, there is something to, if you stick with him long enough, eventually he'll figure it out. It's like those, oh, yeah, that's what Coach was talking about. These little adjustments that you're trying to get him, as opposed to throwing a fresh guy in there. But
especially
Tyson Barrie went in there and made a couple plays. He did.
Mm-hmm. But they were only,
and that was by necessity, right? That was they weren't planning on
that.
They were forced to make that, but Barrie rose to the occasion. So I think there's an argument for and an argument against. And speaking of Barrie, that's another option, is if you wanted to go with 11 forwards and double shift some guys, you could do that and use 7 defensemen. Although, you know, you're already using Forsberg and those guys a lot of minutes. You're gonna tax those guys anyway, so you'd be asking those guys to play even more minutes. So that these are other things. So the drip, I'm sure, is running full throttle.
It's not
each
a drip.
Night.
It's a stream.
It's a stream.
It's a steady stream.
He can't sleep, I'm sure. But I did see with Novak, and I understand why it has to be a dilemma with Coach Bruno in regards to Novak, because he possesses something that you don't have much of, and that's speed on ice.
Yeah, and skill.
And
playmaker.
Skill. There were certain instances in a game where you saw the speed of Novak, but you just wanted to come out more. You wanted to equate to assists or goals for him. But you see that the speed is there. So I don't think the game's too fast for him, per se. I just think, you know, some series, you know, what he gives may not work for this series. Not to say that, you know, it's just – he's just not playoff ready. Maybe this series, like every player, certain series they work better. Some series it's a struggle for them.
That's a great point, the matchup. And there's some guys on the other side that Rick Tocchet is being asked about. What about this guy? Should you take this guy out? And he has chosen to stick to his guys too. I think you could argue that Novak has gotten a little better each game, a little more comfortable. And at home, we'll see. But we'll find out. Maybe we won't find out when we're on the air tomorrow. Mm-hmm. They might be game time decision kind of stuff for that, but we'll wait and see.
And what I don't want to see,
it's a great thing for a caller to bring up, though. I think
absolutely.
It's a fair thing to debate what the right move is.
And we'll continue to get into that today and tomorrow as we lead up to Game 6. What I don't want to hear from the anti-Tommy Novak crew that we've been seeing for the past couple of weeks in the text line is take Tommy Novak out because it can't get worse.
Yeah.
Careful.
He can.
Careful. I said that about the Titans offensive line. and then Andre Dillard came in. So you never know. I don't want to hear the it can't get worse argument. But we've got a bunch more thoughts in the text line and the phone line. So as promised, right back to you coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays. Hey, join 102.5 and 106.3 The Game for Kubota Orange Days at the grand opening of Coleman Tractor of Nashville's newest location this Saturday. Stop by anytime from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. this Saturday for demos, deals, giveaways, and lunch from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. 102.5 The Game will be on site from 10 a.m. to noon. So stop by and see us at Coleman Tractor of Nashville's newest location, 7221 White's Creek Pike in Joelton. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Norfolk Tides at First Horizon Park. Norfolk Tide, correction, just one Tide. Pre-game at 6:20 p.m., first pitch at 6:35 with coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We'll catch up with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet in just about 10 minutes, but Max Herz joins the show. Do want to get into some of your thoughts. Max Herz was at practice this morning, so we're getting all the tea, all the inside info. But first, right to your phones, Dustin is on the line with a thought on the Preds. Go ahead, Dustin. Thanks for calling in.
Good afternoon, guys. With the whole Novak thing, yeah, we know if we put an unknown player in that it could get worse. But I like the seventh defenseman. If Stastny's ready to go, I throw him in there as well, get the seventh defenseman, and leave Barry in. Nothing but good happened with him. He wasn't a liability. The goal scoring has been dried up. Like you said, what's goals are even, 12-12, I think you said earlier?
12-12 for the series.
Okay. All right. And it seems like, you know, they score in bunches, and it's because somebody is out of place for just a little bit of time, or they're really tired. Well, go out there with more defensemen that are not liabilities and take it to the house. Hit them more and play a heavy defensive game. You know, it's do or die tomorrow night, and treat it like game seven, in my opinion. Go out there and leave it all on the ice and just hit them hard and make very little mistakes and nobody be liabilities.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Dustin. It is game seven.
It's win or go home.
It's do or die.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
well, it's not game seven.
But Max Herz is in here, as you mentioned, Caroline.
Hello.
Max, I want you to tell the story. And I don't know if you guys played the clip yesterday on the show with Tyson Barrie not knowing he was going to be in the game. Tell us about what Tyson Barrie told you about his game day, because he did not think he was going to play. But it's nice to have a guy like mm-hmm. that in your back pocket, and he might all of a sudden become a central figure in this series.
Yeah, so Barry took the late bus, which only exists in the playoffs, and it is for the extras, the guys who aren't going to play in the game. So he got to the arena at 6:20. Warm-up started around 6:40, and the game was at 7:20. And as far as I know, Willie, he had not been out there even for warm-ups in weeks. He hadn't played in a game in over a month.
Right, some players choose to go through warm-ups as
well,
part
it's also
of their workout.
The coaches will put them in there, too.
Right.
Yeah. But Barry had not been one of those guys, and he took the ice, and I gave Hal Gill a little nudge in the radio booth. I was like, oh, we got TB2 sighting out there. And sure enough, while we're getting ready to go on to the radio, or I think we were actually on and talking as it was happening, Luke Shen goes down the tunnel 5 minutes into warm-ups. It's like, okay, something's going on here. Makes sense why Barry was out there, and Shen never came back. So Barry is from Vancouver, just across the water in Vancouver Island, and I guess his dog is living with another family member or a friend while his wife and his son are here for the year.
No way.
And he said he spent the entire day walking his dog around the Vancouver seawall, took the dog to the dog park, and had an amazing day with his dog, not ever expecting to play his first playoff game as a Pred.
What a lovely little day for Tyson Barry. I mean, when was the last time we saw him?
It had been over a month. It was the game in Arizona, which was on March 28th.
That's
so
right.
March 28th to April 30th.
That fateful day in Arizona that ended the 18th.
He only played, yeah. I believe, what, six? I think I counted up during the game. Six games since the All-Star break that he'd been in. They gave him some games right after the All-Star break, and then he was in there, unfortunately, on the night, the 9-2 game. And then they went into a different direction with a lot of guys.
Fabro.
Yeah.
Was who came in from that day.
And then they had He played a couple of other games along the line when Lauzon and Carrier were hurt, but that's it. So yeah, for about a month.
But that's good. That's good to have somebody like that on your roster. We know it's been probably difficult for him during the season to not know if you're playing, and then you play a little bit, and then you there's this thing about you getting traded and find a trade partner and all this other stuff, and then all of a sudden you're being counted on in the playoffs, and you're absolutely ready. That's why, you know, this is a good lesson for younger players, not just in hockey, but in professional sports, period, is that, you know, always be ready and don't allow your circumstances to dictate your attitude in sports, because, you know, you may only get that one shot. Mm-hmm. And you better make do on that one shot. And Tyson Barrie, he made do on that shot, which may allow him to play a little bit more as this series continues to go.
And it might help him get a contract
absolutely
for next year.
Because he could have pouted and, you know, just kind of went on his own, but he didn't. He stayed within the game framework of the game, and he did what he could do. And, you know, it worked for him, because when they put him in the lineup, it was like he had missed a beat. He went out there and did what he was supposed to do.
All right, so we've got a number of people on the text line that have weighed in on Novak. Skyler says Novak is an offensive savage, just not big enough or physical enough for these big boys in Vancouver. Gary says, with all this Novak talk, Novak is definitely putting one home on the board tomorrow night. So Gary's made the call. So Andrew Burnett, obviously Max was asking about Novak today. And so I think Max has provided Nick with the sound of that. Let's see what he said.
Yeah, it's been hard for Tommy to kind of get going. I think I saw progress in game four. I didn't really see as much in game five. And in fairness to him, opportunity, ice time probably hasn't been quite as high in those games. So sometimes it is hard to create or to get moving. You know, we're still waiting for him, and it's a great opportunity for him to break out here for us, because we need him. Such a talented kid. I felt really after game four, he was ready to pop here a little bit. Probably last game, you know, again, circumstantially with the ice time, I thought he was really good early, and we lost him a little bit late. So, but he's a key part of our team.
He's not going to be in there a lot when they're trying to protect the lead. They're going to go with their more defender-oriented guys, so
makes
that's
sense.
Probably what he's talking about there in the third period. So, Max, what sense did you get? Did you sense as he was saying that Novak, he's leaning towards keeping Novak in there?
Yeah.
That's the sense you got.
Excuse me. I think that's definitely what that means.
You got to get warmed up, Max. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
You got to come in off the bench ready to go. Where was Tyson Barrie?
Exactly.
Tyson
Barrie.
I was walking my dog. Sorry, D-Mace. That last comment there, he's an important part of our team, I think, is what made me think that way. So I don't know. I mean, excuse me, my voice is just gone. You can talk, Willie. But I think him staying in is more likely than them going 11-7. But I'm with what D-May said and what all three of you guys have said at some point over the last hour. I don't know if you want to take Barrie out after what he did for your power play.
Shen was back out of practice today, as you mentioned.
Yes, it was a very low-attended optional practice.
Oh, okay.
But he was out there.
But he was out there, which would make sense. Get back out there, get your legs back underneath you. I would expect Shen to be back in the lineup, but does that mean Shen and Barrie both in the lineup and perhaps Fabbro out?
I think that could be a possibility.
The text line is calling for that. It is the anti-Fabbro crew like I have never seen it before.
Wow.
And that's unfortunate, because I think Fabro's done a nice job in the two games. But Fabbro, this has been a dilemma all year long. Fabbro, Barrie, and Shen are all right-shot defensemen. So if you did it, if you went Barrie, Shen, which they have tried, you would have two righties on one pair, and then you would have the two lefties, McDonough and Josi, out there, which is not ideal, but it's doable. That's why Stastny, it's one of the reasons Stastny has gotten the call. He's a lefty. So lefty with the Shen righty has been a really good third pair for them. So you got no sense, though, that Stastny's on the verge of coming back, correct? He was not able to skate today.
Practicing with the team. He may have skated before, but he was not out there.
It would be a
group.
Surprise, I would say, to see him. So
yes,
there's options there.
Max, we appreciate you for stopping by.
Yeah, thank you guys. Tell Elliot I say hi.
Our boots on the ground reporter, Max Hurst, thank you very much. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet, will join us coming up next. We'll get his perspective, the Canadian perspective, because I know they're yelling and screaming about Elias Pettersson in Vancouver. So we'll catch up with Elliot Friedman coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.